Hello, everybody. God bless you. Tonight we get to read a wonderful record in John 9 about the man born blind. And actually, Ron Booz did a great sharing about how Jesus Christ is the light of the world. And so I encourage you to go back and listen to that again also. But we're going to read the whole record tonight, and it's going to show us how Jesus has authority as the Son of God over both physical and spiritual blindness. And I encourage you also to go online and to download the chart that I made, which is a summary of all 8 of the signs. It's on each recording, so you could download it and print it out so you have that. All right. We're in John 9, and I'm going to read tonight from the New Living Translation, the NLT. By the way, that's Al's favorite translation, so I hope he'll be blessed hearing it. So verse 1. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been blind from birth. Rabbi, his disciples asked him, why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins? Jesus answered, it was not because of his sins or his parents' sins. This happened so the power of God could be seen in him. We must quickly carry out the task assigned us by the one who sent us. The night is coming and then no one can work. But while I am here in the world, I am the light of the world. Just before this, at the Feast of the Tabernacles, Jesus had declared himself that he was the light of the world in front of everyone. And now he's reiterating it again to his disciples so that they understand what is going to happen here. It was a common belief that blindness was caused by sin, but Jesus says that neither his sins nor his parents' sins are the cause, but it's so that God would be glorified. Now, there were prophecies in the Old Testament that the Messiah would be the one who would heal the blind. And before this happened in John 9, he had already healed other blind people, but he had not ever yet healed a man who had been blind from his birth. So here's a couple of the verses that are from the Old Testament. You can look at Isaiah 35 and then verse 5. It says, and when he comes, he will open the eyes of the blind and unplug the ears of the deaf. That sounds so great. Unplug the ears of the deaf. But open the eyes of the blind was a key thing that the Messiah was going to do. I'm not going to read it, but there's 2 other verses you can jot down. Isaiah 42:7 and Psalm 146, verse 8. But there is one more that I would like to read, and that's, since you're in Isaiah, just go to chapter 29, and in verse 18, it says, in that day the deaf will hear words read from a book, and the blind will see through the gloom and darkness. Now, one of the things about being physically blind is that this man had lived in darkness his whole life. He didn't even know what light was. And the despair and hopelessness that must have been in his heart, because there would not have been any recourse up until Jesus had started healing blind people. There was no way he would ever have changed where that would have changed for him. But I'm sure this man had heard that Jesus had already healed other blind people. So when Jesus sees him, the man, he goes on to just straight away heal him. He doesn't even ask him if he wants to be healed. So let's go back and read some more in John 9, verse 6. Then Jesus spit on the ground. He made mud with the saliva, and he spread the mud over the blind man's eyes. He told him, go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam. Siloam means sent. So the man went and washed and came back seeing. It's just such a simple, beautiful description of what happened. Now, Jesus broke the Sabbath again in two ways. By kneading the clay or making mud, that was forbidden, and also putting spit or saliva on his eyes. It was a common belief that a holy man's spit had healing power in it, and he was demonstrating his authority by doing this, but he was doing it on a Sabbath day. So the blind man had to decide, just like the man at the pool of Bethesda, whether he would obey or not. And so the man, it just says, so the man went and washed. He didn't have any questions about it. It was not like Naaman when the prophet told him to go wash in the Jordan. And he goes, well, why should I do that? And this time the man just said, yes. Yeah, I don't care if it's the Sabbath, I'm going to go and wash. So now we get the neighbors involved. Verse 8. His neighbors and others who knew him as a blind beggar asked each other, isn't this a man who used to sit and beg? Some said he was. And others said, no, he just looks like him. But the beggar kept saying, yes, I am the same one. They asked him, well, who healed you? What happened? He told them, the man they called Jesus made mud and spread it over my eyes and told me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash yourself. So I went and washed, and now I can see. So he's so excited about being able to see. So verse 12, where is he now? They asked. Well, I don't know, he replied. Then they took the man who had been blind to the Pharisees because it was on the Sabbath that Jesus had made the mud and healed him. Uh-oh, here we go. He was on the Sabbath again. Verse 15, now the Pharisees get involved. The Pharisees asked the man all about it. So he told them, he put the mud over my eyes, and when I washed it away, I could see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man Jesus is not from God, for he is working on the Sabbath. Others said, but how could an ordinary sinner do such miraculous signs? So there was a deep division of opinion among them. Even the Pharisees were not united in this idea. Verse 17, then the Pharisees again questioned the man who had been blind and demanded, what's your opinion about this man who healed you? The man replied, I think he must be a prophet. Now we get the parents involved. Verse 18. The Jewish leaders still refused to believe the man had been blind and could now see, so they called in his parents. They asked them, is this your son? Was he born blind? If so, how can he now see? His parents replied, we know this is our son and that he was born blind, but we don't know how he can see or who healed him. Ask him. He is old enough to speak for himself. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders who had announced that anyone saying Jesus was the Messiah would be expelled from the synagogue. That's why they said, he is old enough. Ask him. Fear and fear of repercussions makes people do really crazy things. Just think about it. If you had a son who was born blind and he was healed, would you not be rejoicing? It's hard for me to understand how come his parents wouldn't stand up for him. But they didn't. And so now we go back to the Pharisees questioning the man again. Verse 24. So for the second time, they called in the man who had been blind and told him, God should get the glory for this, because we know this man, Jesus, is a sinner. The man replied, I don't know whether he is a sinner, but I know this. I was blind, and now I can see. But what did he do, they asked. How did he heal you? Look, the man exclaimed, I told you once, didn't you listen? Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too? Then they cursed him and said, You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know God spoke to Moses, but we don't even know where this man comes from. Why, that's very strange, the man replied. He healed my eyes, and yet you don't know where he comes from? And he goes on to say, We know that God doesn't listen to sinners, but he is ready to hear those who worship him and do his will. Ever since the world began, no one has been able to open the eyes of someone born blind. If this man were not from God, he couldn't have done it. They answered, You were born a total sinner. Are you trying to teach us? And they threw him out of the synagogue. Now, that was not a permanent throwing out, because if someone would be permanently thrown, cast out, it had to be voted on by the Sanhedrin. But they could cast him out for at least a month. The man didn't care. His sight was such a gift, and that so it didn't matter to him that he was cast out of the synagogue. And now Jesus comes and finds him, verse 35. When Jesus heard what had happened, he found the man and asked, Do you believe in the Son of Man? The man answered, Who is he, sir? I want to believe in him. You have seen him, Jesus said, and he is speaking to you. Yes, Lord, I believe, the man said, and he worshiped Jesus. The man would have possibly have recognized Jesus' voice, but that would have been the first time that he actually saw him with his physical eyes. Can you imagine how exciting that was to actually see Jesus? Now, it's also interesting that since this sign is about Jesus' authority, he again questions the man and says, Do you believe? The purpose of the signs was so that people would believe. And believing in Jesus Christ always brings freedom. And there's freedom in the relationship that he starts developing there. And it really puts the contrast with the Pharisees that relationship and religion are totally opposite each other. Now, verse 39, Jesus goes on and he tells him, I entered this world to render judgment, to give sight to the blind, and to show those who think they see that they are blind. Some Pharisees who were standing nearby heard him and asked, Are you saying we're blind? Jesus replied, If you were blind, you wouldn't be guilty, but you remain guilty because you claim you can see. The Pharisees, they couldn't see anything except what their own presuppositions were. Don't do this on the Sabbath. Don't go here. Don't make mud, because that's considered work. So they were blinded in a spiritual way, really much more than even the blind man who was in darkness physically. And religion always brings this kind of blindness and hardness. And those who are going this way, they don't acknowledge where the light comes from. Now, the last verses I want to read are from 2 Corinthians 4, because this passage really tells who actually was blinding the minds of those who didn't believe. Verse 4, Satan, who is the god of this world, has blinded the minds of those who don't believe. They are unable to see the glorious light of the good news. They don't understand this message about the glory of Christ, who is the exact likeness of God. You see, we don't go around preaching about ourselves. We preach that Jesus Christ is Lord, and we ourselves are your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, "Let there be light in the darkness," has made this light shine in our hearts so that we could know the glory of God that is seen in the face of Jesus Christ. We now have this light shining in our hearts, but we ourselves are like fragile clay jars containing this great treasure. This makes it clear that our great power is from God and not from ourselves. We have this light shining in our hearts, and therefore we can know the glory of God that's in the face of Jesus Christ. I think there's a question we can ask ourselves here. Do you believe in the Son of Man? Yes. We preach that Jesus Christ is Lord, and we ourselves are your servants for Jesus' sake. So Jesus had authority not only over physical blindness, but also over spiritual darkness. And so do we. We can shine out and give the words of life. We can go and heal others by telling them the light of the gospel. We have the right to heal and restore sight to a physical body, but we also have the right to and the authority to tell people the spiritual, where the spiritual light is, and restore sight to their soul. Now, on the chart, it talks about the discourse that follows in chapter 10. It's all about the Good Shepherd. And that passage about the Good Shepherd is really pointed against the Pharisees and the leaders. They were like the hireling and the thief that came not but for to steal, kill, and destroy. But Jesus said that I am come that they might have life and have it more abundantly. Believe and have life. That's what the purpose of the signs are. So that's the man born blind. God bless you. I think I'll